Hello, and welcome to Soothing Pod Sleep Stories. My name is Laura, and tonight, I will be your guide as we journey back to colonial New England and unwind with a retelling of the classic story, The Scarlet Letter. We will spend time with the star-crossed lovers, Hester Prynne and Arthur Dimmesdale, prior to their fall from grace, and get to experience a long summer along the coast as the two fall in love. Before we begin, however, let us take a moment to unwind and find comfort in the space that we are in, here and now. Close your eyes and allow your body to sink into the mattress beneath you. Here and now, there are no obligations. There is no to-do list. At this moment, simply lie still with your eyes closed and allow your body to rest. For a moment, I want you to imagine your bed sitting on the edge of a beach. You're now in coastal New England. To the right of you, you can hear the sounds of the waves gently lapping against the rock-peppered cove as they come in, then recede. Come in, then recede. Overhead, you can hear seagulls as they dip and dive through the air, floating on the gentle ocean breeze. Their calls ring through the sky, softening against the lofty pines that blanket the coastline just above your head. You focus your attention on the waves, lapping against the shore by your feet, on the sand beneath you. You can almost picture the white spray as the waves crest over the sand, then recede back into the ocean, painting the sand darker and colder as they return back where they belong. The sound alone soothes you, but then there's the smell of the air, the freshness of it. You take a deep breath in, feeling your lungs expand as the air nourishes you. In that breath, you can taste and feel the beauty and freshness of the world around you. You can feel the refreshing tang of the pines, the soothing briny salt of the sea, the dense, layered aroma of the fog clinging to the shoreline. You can smell the forest, loam and moss, peacefully growing beneath the nearby trees. And you are certain that if you breathe deep enough, you can smell the rain approaching from miles and miles away, preparing to give this area some much-needed downpour once you are safely in your home. Then, there's the sensation on your skin. Overhead, the morning sun is bright and full. Its rays fall upon you, gently kissing every exposed inch of your skin, inviting you to relax. And relax you do. You can somehow feel every individual beam of light upon your skin, but it doesn't stop there. You can feel the golden rays sinking into your skin and kindly embracing your muscles, relaxing them completely and entirely, You feel the weight of the day melt away from you as the sun effortlessly works to unwind your muscles. And, in addition, unwind your mind. The thoughts that have been stirring there are slowly dissipated, floating away on the same ocean breeze that's brushing against your skin, leaving you lighter and freer. Imagine those thoughts floating away, like blue ribbons on the breeze. Watch as they dip and fall through the air, heading toward the distant coastline, until you can no longer see them. Those thoughts are gone, and you are simply left to enjoy this warm day on this beautiful beach. Now that we have taken the time to relax and find comfort in the place that we are, here and now, let us begin our story. The Puritan Massachusetts Bay Colony in New England was not a particularly free place, and yet Hester Prynne was excited for the promise that it provided. Hester was a young, talented woman, a godly woman, who married her much older husband, a scholar named Chillingworth, when she was a young lady living in England. They had spent many hours in his study together. He would read over books while Hester worked on her embroidery or other handwork. And though he was an intelligent, well-read, wealthy man, he was not a man who had much emotional intelligence. He was not a sensitive man, nor a poetic one. He was a man of facts and figures, a man who liked the idea of things more than the action of actually executing them. Their life in England had been decent, but never overtly happy. Hester spent much of her time gazing out the windows, hoping for a brighter future, hoping for a life along the water somewhere. She was tired of the dreary days in England and longed for something new and exciting. Most mornings she would awaken to fog outside her window. She would journey to the study, where her husband would already be reading and annotating things. He would give her a quick wave, then immediately turn his attention back to his books. She would then spend the afternoon by the window, knitting and doing embroidery and other busy work. But often, her gaze would drift out the window and tangle with the fog-shrouded trees as she dreamed of a different life. Most days she found comfort in the Bible or talking to other women of the community, but she never found exactly what she was looking for. Because truly, no one in her community was accustomed to speaking freely. They didn't speak of negative thoughts or feelings. They had a facade to uphold, and holding that facade up was above honesty or catharsis in any sense. After a year or two of marriage, Chillingworth and Hester heard whispers of people moving to the colonies. They heard of coastlines peppered with rocky cliff sides, of forests and timber as far as the eye could see, flourishing with wild plants and game. They heard of fair weather, with less rain than they experienced in England. And they heard of harbours overflowing with fish. They also heard of a place where they could celebrate their religion and continue their Puritan traditions with no fear of persecution. And so, they decided that they were to become colonists. But Chillingworth had business to tend to in England, so he sent Hester first to get herself established before his arrival. She would get the house settled, find her place in the community, and then Chillingworth would come for her eventually. The ride to the new promised land was a long one, but on that ride, Hester was excited for the freedom that this new land would provide. This freedom that she was told would be hers. On the boat ride, she couldn't help but notice a man that was riding with them. A man who she had heard of in her inner circles for quite some time. His name was Reverend Arthur Dimmesdale, and he was known for being one of the most remarkable theologians in all of England. He gave sermons every single night. The Puritans would all gather around as he stood upon his carefully crafted podium and read the Word of God. They were a tired group of people, a group of people desperate to escape persecution, desperate to step off the boat and into the world where they could live freely. And with every word that Dimmesdale uttered, they felt freedom and comfort fill their hearts more and more. Dimmesdale was a man that spoke with passion, a man whose sermons were masterpieces, woven from his own personal experiences, his own emotions, which were deeply and truly felt. He was not a man standing upon the podium for fame or money or perceived righteousness. He was a man that was standing on the podium because it was what he was born to do, and it was what he truly believed in. Every single night, Hester found comfort in his words. Very few people, let alone people of the church, dared to speak with such honesty and eloquence as he did. He was not a man shielding his emotions from the world, or hiding behind intelligence to protect his lack of emotional maturity. He was a full human being. On occasion, Hester would smile at the Reverend. He had a code of conduct to uphold, and speaking to him too much on the boat, without the company of others, would surely draw attention. Hester had already received some strange looks for arriving on the boat with no children and no husband by her side. A woman alone was something out of the norm, something that was heavily frowned upon by society. And the Reverend knew that, but at the same time, he felt a deep urge to protect her, a deep urge to help her feel less lonely. He was admired by the people on the boat, by all the Puritans, but he wondered if they truly understood and cared for the words that he was speaking. When he looked into Hester's eyes, he saw something different. There was a light and curiosity in them that many of the others lacked. They looked at him differently than she did, and something about the way she looked at him reminded him of why he had begun this journey in the first place. After their long trip, they finally landed upon the shore where their new home would be. Not only was it their first time seeing land in weeks, it was some of the most beautiful land they had ever laid eyes on. The town was set upon a hill. The shoreline was peppered with those rocky New England cliffs, with beautiful birds nesting atop each and every one. The pine trees seemed to reach up to the sky, impossibly tall and beautiful. And the town itself was truly living in harmony with nature. Between the homes, there were meadows full of wild flowers, and rivers that wound from the very tops of the hills and the mountains in the distance, all the way to the sides of the cliffs, where they tumbled off into the ocean. This was home, and it was beautiful. From the outside, it looked like everything they had been promised. The Puritans were all excited to step off the boat and step foot on this land that was entirely new to them. They had to climb off the boat and into rocky dinghies that would take them ashore. They filled, one by one, family by family, into the dinghies, everyone waiting their turn. Hester stood there in joyful anticipation, so hopeful for this new land that she didn't even care that she was without a child or husband landing upon the shore. When it was Hester's time to step into the dinghy, it was Reverend Dimmesdale who helped her. He gently took her hand, helping stabilize her. "My lady," he muttered under his breath. He dared to place his other hand upon her back to help guide her down into the boat. And once she was sitting, she looked up at him. He took his hand away from hers, but not before lingering for just a second too long. No one in the vicinity saw it. It was such a simple movement, that lingering. And yet, it sent spirals of emotions exploding between them, fiery and passionate. Then it was the Reverend who rowed them ashore. Hester faced him as he began to row. He avoided her eyes as they made their way to the coast, the tension between them still overwhelmingly powerful. But Hester couldn't help but steal a glance on occasion. She saw the way his muscles moved as he rowed the boat along, the way the salty water clung to his cheeks, drifting down his skin, away from his deep, radiant eyes. And the Reverend, too, was trying to avoid staring at Hester. She was a woman of undeniable beauty. Those blue eyes of hers that were always swirling with curiosity also always seemed to be smiling, like they were constantly finding beauty in the world around them, no matter what the situation. As the wind whipped her hair around, she raised a dainty hand to tuck it behind her ear. Women were expected to look pristine at all times, and that split second of her hair escaping would have been frowned upon. The Reverend pretended he did not see it, still averting his eyes to the shoreline or the water beside him. But he did catch glimpses of Hester as she gazed at the shoreline. He saw the brightness in her expression, the hope in it, and it made his heart skip a beat every time he saw those sparks. He watched as the salty ocean water peppered the backs of her hands and clung to that loose strand of her hair. He wanted to reach out and dry her, to make her more comfortable, but he knew it wouldn't be acceptable. Soon, they reached the shore. Everyone went their separate ways, being led by the leaders of the expedition to their new homes. Hester was led to a cozy home on the edge of town, still on the main street. Seeing it filled her with joy. There were wild flowers beside it, stretching into the fields and woods as far as the eye could see. She remembered how stifled she felt in England, locked between the fog-shrouded woods and the cobbled stone streets, and this truly felt like a breath of fresh air. And yet, there was some anxiety with the move. For Hester knew there were eyes on her. She was not a traditional woman, having been married for over a year with no children. And her husband was, after all, nowhere to be seen. She was not perceived as a model Puritan, and the townspeople made sure she knew that. And so, when she got settled, she decided that she would do all she could to prove herself. She attended church and sat at attention for the full service every single time. She sang the loudest, she smiled the brightest at the reverend's jokes, and she was the first to volunteer when any help was needed. She wanted to become a model Puritan. But with that desire, another desire came bubbling up. After church, she would linger behind to help clean. It was a duty many of the women took to heart. But she stayed even longer than them, wanting the beloved church space to be spotless. While she cleaned, the Reverend would often sit in the corner, going over his notes or reading passages from the Bible again, preparing for the next day's service. For the first few weeks, they hardly ever spoke to each other. Hester knew it was frowned upon, and she didn't want to overstep any boundaries. But soon, they began to speak. After all, they were both lonely. Though the Reverend was a pillar of the community, he was often seen as just that, a figurehead. He was the guiding light for many, a holy man, a community leader, not a real person. He longed to have real conversations with people, to laugh, to discuss his philosophy and life and views outside of the church. But there were no opportunities for that. He had to be the godly man, the religious man who everyone could turn to. At first, their conversations started about the church and the morning service. They would discuss the Word of God at length as Hester cleaned. And the more they spoke, the more the Reverend felt for her. She was an intelligent woman, more intelligent than almost any of the other members of the community. And she understood the Bible more than them too. Their conversations always somehow simultaneously put the Reverend on his toes and brought him immense comfort. She always asked questions he would have to really think about, questions he had never considered before. And with each discussion, the Reverend felt himself growing closer and closer to this beautiful woman. Soon, the conversations weren't just about the Bible or God. They spoke about their reasons for coming to the New World. The Reverend spoke of his life back in England, and for the first time ever, he admitted that those years hadn't been particularly rewarding. That he was in a rut, longing for something else. And she too admitted that for the first time, on one particularly rainy evening, the two stood in the church doors for quite some time, waiting for the rain to stop. In the distance, they watched the rain pitter-patter across the soft ocean waves, filling them with a sense of calm and peace. As they stood there, the Reverend found himself staring intently at Hester. She was silhouetted by the grey of the falling rain, by the haze of it, and she had never looked more beautiful. A few droplets fell upon her face, and the Reverend surprised himself when he reached over and brushed the droplets away, drying her as he had wanted to on the boat all those days ago. Hester met his eyes, a gentle gasp escaping her lips at his touch. It was not acceptable, and yet she didn't mind. Once the shock had worn off, she gave the Reverend a kind smile. Then, for the first time, she spoke of her husband and how she had been forced to marry him, about how he wasn't a man that was very in touch with his emotions or the world around him. She had never confessed such feelings before. And here, standing in the doorway of the church on a rainy day, it seemed like the right time. After she uttered her confession, the clouds parted, and the sun began to shine yet again, as if encouraging her, telling her she had made the right decision. Hester and the Reverend parted ways that day, but that was just the first of many days where they would talk in depth about their personal lives. One day, Hester mentioned that before their arrival to New England, she never spent time by the ocean. The Reverend was touched and surprised by this, and asked her if she had seen the cove north of town. Hester had never travelled there, or seen it before. The Reverend confessed it was a well-hidden secret, something very few townspeople had ventured over to see. He had only found it going on a moonlight stroll, unable to sleep. The question hovered in the air long before he'd even dared to ask it. And then, as they approached the church door, ready to leave for the day, it tumbled from his lips. He offered to show Hester the cove. Hester brightened at the suggestion and agreed. The walk to the cove took them far away from town, away from the prying eyes of the townspeople. And really, for the first time, they felt free in their interactions with one another. They talked at length about anything and everything, their intellectual conversation flowing freely. And when they finally reached the beach, the Reverend watched the expression of total and complete awe wash over Hester's face. She had never seen anything so beautiful. The two clambered down to the beach together, and as they reached the shore, Hester gazed out over the waves with a look of utter peace and love. The Reverend couldn't help but stare at her. She was so much like him in many ways, a member of the community who somehow felt as though they didn't fit in. A member of the community who felt stifled by the rules and obligations, stifled by the judgment. They were united in that. And still, the Reverend was surprised when Hester stepped out of her shoes. She was barefoot now before him, something entirely unacceptable in their culture. She hiked her dress up slightly, causing his heart to race. And then she stepped into the waves, her eyes closed with complete and utter relaxation and connection. When she opened them, she found the Reverend staring at her, his eyes swirling with emotion. At that moment, he wanted nothing more than to kiss her. He knew it wasn't allowed. He knew that it wasn't right. He was a holy man, and she a married woman. And yet, the two stayed at the beach for quite some time, and as they left, the Reverend helped her over the cliffs by taking her hand in his own. This time they did not look away. They locked eyes and smiled, allowing the tension to rise and rise. That night, Hester and the Reverend lay together. It was the most magical night of both their lives, a night of passion and connection and belonging, a night of catharsis. that night would prove to be a challenge, a mark on them for the rest of their lives. Hester fell pregnant, and when she gave birth to her daughter, she was marked with a scarlet letter A, a letter announcing to the world and her community that she was an adulterer. She was made to stand on a scaffold for hours in front of everyone to pay for her sins. And as she stood up there, she was mercilessly humiliated and questioned, asked who the father of her child was. But Hester refused to answer. And in the crowd, the Reverend ached to support her, to absolve her of her sins, to be there for her. But he could not. The community relied on him, and Hester had told him to never speak of the truth. She would take the fall for the night they had spent together. And though Hester took the fall for their night together, it did not make her weak. Her daughter, Pearl, was the most important person in her life. She thanked the heavens that her daughter had been given to her, even though she came with that scarlet letter. Hester was forced to move to the outskirts of town, to a cottage by the shore. She made just enough money to scrape by, doing embroidery, and she was paid much less than her peers because of her transgression. And yet, she did not become bitter. She lived her life with her daughter in as much harmony as she could, raising her daughter to be kind, loving, and intelligent. But across town, the Reverend struggled. The weight of his sin, the weight of seeing the woman he loved hurt by their transgression, it wounded him deeply. Because truly, they did love one another. It was not a simple night of passion. They had ached for one another for quite some time. They had longed for nothing more than to be together. And together, they were. The Reverend met Hester in secret more than once, desperately apologizing to her, desperately wanting for her to tell the townspeople the truth, desperately wanting to hurt as she had been hurt. But Hester refused, wanting the Reverend to continue his life as he had been. And in those meetings, the two could feel the love between them, and yet they knew they could not be together. Hester's husband had returned in secret and vowed to murder the father of Hester's child. Hester knew she could never tell the truth. Her love for the Reverend prevented her from doing that. And so, she lived her life of isolation on the cliffside, loving her daughter more and more each and every day. Yes, she grew stronger indeed. And though the two lived a darker life after their encounter, they occasionally found themselves thinking of the conversations they used to have, of that trip to the beach, of that night they shared together. And though these were the days wrapped in shame, these were also the days when they had felt joy and love for the first time ever. I hope you have enjoyed this story, and it has brought you a night of peaceful, restful sleep. Please join me again tomorrow night for another sleep story. Until then, sweet dreams.